Now we do.
Senate Agriculture and Veterans Committee will come to order. I don't believe Senator Lynch is here, so we'll start with the next one on the line, Senator Laurie, Senate File 957. Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 957 is a non-appropriated fund instrumentality authorization. And this is really a authorization for the National Guard to collect monies. It's not monies from the state. It's donations and the like to put into Camp Ripley recreation facilities to help promote health and welfare of the National Guard members serving up there. And I have with me Terry Palmer to discuss the bill a little bit. So welcome.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Terry Palmer, Department of Military Affairs. Thank you for allowing us to testify in this bill today. Basically, this activity has been in existence at Camp Ripley for some time. They purchase recreational equipment and then loan it out to service members and their families for use at Camp Ripley for recreational activities. The problem was discovered during an audit of on the federal side that there is no authority for this activity to exist, and we were given the options of either attaching this fund, this activity, to an active component installation, which would be, in our case, Fort McCoy, or to get state authority to operate, and that's what we are trying to do, because if we try to piggyback on a federal activity, it would be very a very cumbersome activity for us, and it wouldn't be in our best interest to do that. So basically, that's what we're looking for.
With that, we'd be happy this should be really uncontroversial. It's we're looking for the state to authorize the guard to collect these funds and oversee them. Be happy to stand for any questions.
Senator Laurie, I don't think we need any questions. As long as you're starting this committee out, there's no money, so.
There's no money.
I might as well be right up front with you. We've rocked our project up, so.
I'm not asking for any.
Sure, I understand. Senator Laurie, would you like to do with your bill?
I'd like to move it.
It goes to state and local government operations.
I'd like to move that Senate File 957 be recommended to pass and move to state and local government operations.
State and local government operations. Oversight, I guess that's what they call it.
And oversight.
And we have a quorum yet?
Yes.
We do? Let the record show our quorum is present. Now, Senator Laurie renews his motion that Senate File 957 recommended pass be referred to state and local government operations oversight. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Laurie, I think you have another one, don't you?
Yeah, 1675.
Proceed, Senator Laurie.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. 1675, once again, just to be clear from the outset, we're not asking for any money, once again, which is good since we got our omnibus bill out of here already. This is really asking for a new eligible individual to be defined for uses of the Support Our Troops account money that's generated off the Support Our Troops license plates. There are a group of people who are not active duty any longer who have severe financial needs as a direct result of the active duty that they had and are unable to be eligible for this program right now, and they would like to be able to use some of these grants for some of these individuals. So it's a small expansion of the current language defining the eligible individuals for the Support Our Troops Fund. And once again, Terry is here to, Terrence Palmer is here to describe the details of this bill.
Let's hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, Terry Palmer, Department of Military Affairs. As we entered into a grant agreement with the Minnesota Military Family Foundation to provide grants to the eligible service members that were listed in the original statute language, since that time we've recognized that there's a group of individuals, it's not a large group of individuals, but there are some who they'll get their orders for active duty, quit their jobs, report, for the post where they're going to be getting their training to go off overseas in most cases. But what will happen is they'll become injured or they'll have a medical condition which will preclude them from being deployed. So they're sent home and they are no longer in an active duty status. They haven't qualified for veteran status, so they can't get funds from the Support Our Troops plates from the Army National Guard side, nor do they qualify for veterans assistance. So what we're asking to do is to expand this eligibility pool to include those people who, through no fault of their own, find themselves in a predicament where they're unable to work or are having difficulty finding work.
Well, Senator Laurie, I carried that bill with the governor's blessing to do that, hoping we'd have lots of money. But I don't think it's quite got to where we need to be. So your bill's okay, but we need to spread the word around to people that to get that license plate, because that money comes directly into us. Senator Engelbristen, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me how much money there is in that account, or how much there currently is, or yearly, or what's the average? I don't have a clue.
Senator Engelbristen, I'll have our financial expert tell you.
Yes, the amount of money that's anticipated to be in this account is $338,000 starting in fiscal year 8. And this was one of the appropriations that we did make in the budget bill. Half of the money that comes in goes to military affairs, and the other half goes to the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you.
Ms. Corbin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. When I read 1 and 2, Senator Laurie, it just says, for example, on line 1.15, it says, who have been called to active service. So I think the explanation was that they had been called but then hadn't qualified for active service, and so they were falling through the crack. But according to what we already have, is all they have to do is be called, and they would be eligible. Am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, we've taken a strict interpretation of the language, and because of the way 1905 is written, we interpret that to mean that they have to be in one of those eligible categories, actually having to serve in that capacity.
I mean, essentially, the people that we're trying to reach here have not been able to be helped by this program to date, and this would allow that.
You look on the back, they can only get up to 2,000, the way I read it.
That's right. So
that doesn't do much help if you have any problems.
No, it's not as much help as most of us here would really like to be able to offer, but it is something, and it is, again, it's a current financial need directly related to active military service is the requirement in the language, and I think that the flexibility to be able to allow those grants in that situation is wise.
Well, Senator Laurie, if we can pass our budget bill on the floor on Thursday, there's quite a bit of money in different parts of that bill, and I'm confident we'll pass it. So this is just another tool to help.
Well, I know I'll vote for it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Not Senator Laurie, this bill, the way it looks to me, can go right straight to the floor, if that's the motion you'd like to make.
We'll move that Senate File 1675 be recommended to pass.
Senator Lori moves that Senate File 1675 be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chair and members.
Then we're going to go back to Senator Lynch. Welcome to the committee. And that is Senate File 952.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, members. I'm pleased to be a part of your committee today. This is my first visit to this committee. And I'm especially excited to bring you what I think is a very good proposal that has no fiscal appropriation attached to it. And I don't mind mentioning that, having just come from a meeting with Senator Berglund as we are working to come together on our health finance bill, this is like a breath of fresh air to be able to talk about something without a fiscal appropriation. But two things this bill does. One, the overall premise is it provides the guard some additional flexibility to be able to do some creative things that help to support the guard and its members, and particularly in retaining some of their members. There are two provisions, one regarding a bonus for officers, and the other one is a scholarship, some scholarship opportunities. And with me today, again, we have Eric Allness, and I'm going to have him provide you with the specific details of those two provisions.
Welcome to committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. Just to start out the testimony, start out with a little fact. I did a review of the state active duty that your National Guard has performed since the state's state was instituted in the 1800s, and over 780,000 man days have been performed by your National Guard in support of the state. So that indicates to me the importance of why the state has instituted this tuition reimbursement program, so that people have an incentive to join the Guard rather than the other reserve components. So what we've asked for in this time is just give the Adjutant General a little bit more flexibility so he can strategically shape the force to make sure you always have the force necessary to address the needs of the state in the years to come. And there's two parts of this. The first part is extending the bonus to new officers. And you'd say, well, why would you want to give it to officers? Well, we already can give a reenlistment bonus to NCOs going up their 12th year of service. Well, a lot of those fine young non-commissioned officer leaders are thinking about becoming an officer, and they might be in their 8th or 10th year of service, but there's a disincentive for them to become an officer because they'd lose their bonus. What this allows us to do is continue that bonus while they become an officer and continue their career and be a leader in the National Guard. The second part, the LEAD scholarship, is we offer that to high school seniors, either people who are looking at joining the Guard or who have recently joined the Guard, and it's a way for us to identify good young leaders, people can be leaders in the Guard, either as a non-commissioned officer or an officer in the future. And it's a way to give them just a small amount of money, $1,000, to help offset their initial college expenses and help promote their success in their school endeavors, and then also recognize them a future leader in the Guard and encourage them to go further in the Guard career. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair,
it looks like you're going to get by pretty easy today.
Mr. Chair, I'm appreciative of any of those do not stop and go, continue on, so I'll take it.
Well, Senator Lynch, if you just come from that health, I've been there before, and that's you need a little relaxation when you come to this. Senator Wiggins.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 952 be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
Senator Wiggins moves that Senate File 952 be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So adopted.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for your time.
Senator Scogin, Senate File 699.
Right along here. Thank you.
you, Mr. Chair. Committee, if you'll turn your attention to Senate File 699, you'll see a piece of legislation that we talked about in a couple of different committees, I think, this year, and it came to my attention that they would like it brought forward, and we are pleased to have Mike with me today, right?
Perfect.
I'm sorry. And he's going to help you walk through the new parts of this bill. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, members. Mr. Chair, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The bill before us does not change current law. What it does is clarify the provision of providing for the continuation of state licenses and certificates of registration of firearms for employees currently in active military duty and employed in an occupation requiring firearm training. Such professions and occupations would include peace officers, game wardens, correctional officials, private security guards, and animal control officers. This is part of the governor's military and veterans package, and we certainly do support it.
Members, when I first looked at this, I thought, how ridiculous do we do things up here sometimes? You've been in the Army and over and overseas, you ought to be able to carry a gun around without going through training. That didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So, and I did talk to the DNR, and they, everything has worked out. There's no problem with it whatsoever. So, Senator, is there any other questions? I should say, anybody against the bill? Senator Shadrach.
Thanks, Ben, Mr. Chair. Could you give an example of where the current laws have not meeting the intent of the of what we have in statute?
Who may have been hindered by the current law?
Yeah. Example.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shadrach, I think the issue is, you know, we're clarifying the current law. Some people aren't interpreting it very clearly. So they are requiring some of these professions that I listed earlier to have to then go through the recertification. When they were certified, they got called up for active duty. They're going over. They're coming back, and then they're saying, now you got to get recertified before you can do this, you know, enter your position again, your profession. So I think it's more of just clarifying, making it clear to those that are needing to abide by this law that it does also stand for people that had a or needed a license, firearm license. I don't have any specific instances that I can quote for you.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, with regards to your comments about sometimes we don't make any sense, that's very true. What comes out of St. Paul sometimes, but under the Personal Protection Act, as a sheriff, I still have to require these very same people to go through training before they get their handgun permit. And I guess my question is, has there been any consideration in regards to actually going one step further and allowing that to happen without any training? Because it costs about $100 to do that type of training.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I certainly think that would be something we'd be willing to talk about, including like as an amendment into this.
Senator Engelbretson, we might be getting into some real deep water if we get... If we go that route.
Mr. Chair, that's why I said we'd be willing to discuss.
We concentrate just on this issue because I've been here when all that was put together, and we can be here till July and August if we get into that predicament. So I understand what you're saying. I'm more than willing to listen, but I think this bill ought to go by itself, and maybe we have that at another day. But Senator Engelbretson.
Exactly. That's what I'd like to do is follow up with him if that's okay for another day. But I think it's something we should really look at because it was always kind of foolish to me to have to require that.
Senator Shadrach.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe Mr. Knopf can answer this. How does the bill affect firearm safety training and certification?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shadrach, it doesn't because this is registration for a trade, employment, or occupation. You'll see Senator Scogin's next bill deals with that.
Okay. I just see in the title it says licenses and certificates of registration requiring firearm safety and usage training. Yeah. So I at least in that verbiage, it seems to apply to the firearm safety certificate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Chaudhry. This is in Chapter 326, which deals with employment issues, and it does tie everything in. If you look on 1.12 and 1.13, to a bylaw to be licensed or registered by this, in order to carry out a practice of trade, employment, occupation, or profession within the state, who's also required to renew the license. That basically makes it apply, as I read it, only to where it's required for a license or trade. Again, Senator Scogin's bill will address the hunting provision next, in the next bill.
And Mr. Chair,
question
for the department. Does every member of the armed services go through firearm training? Does everyone do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I'd have to get back to you. I wouldn't want to answer that. I feel strongly that they more than likely do when you go through basic training. I think everybody shoots a weapon. I haven't been through basic training in a number of years, so I wouldn't feel comfortable saying definitely, but I can certainly get back to you on that.
Mr. Chair, and that's my understanding, is that they more than likely do. My question is, does everyone?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I will investigate that for you. I'm pretty sure they all do, but I want to be positive for you.
Yes, sir. I'm not sure that every
CC,
single
if I was going
does.
To join the Army and I was going to go over Iraq, I sure as the devil learn how to shoot a gun before I get over there, I can tell you that.
Mr. Chair, I believe it is part of basic training, no matter what branch you're in, that you're shooting a weapon.
Thanks, Senator.
Chair, and there's some ropes. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scogin and Mr. Puglisi, I served as a Navy officer for 5 years, and I never shot a weapon. And I never went through any sort of weapons training at all. As a staff officer, a line officer, it may be different. As staff officers, I believe there were many groups of us that never went through any kind of weapons training at all.
Mr. Chair, I believe we have the answer to my right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Collins, Department of Military Affairs. All military people receive weapons training as part of their basic military training, but more salient to the point is that anyone going into a war zone or a hostile danger area, the theater commander requires specific tasks that they get trained on, and in all instances, when it is an imminent danger, a war zone, that includes weapon qualification training and weapon familiarization handling, as well as all military people who are deployed in those areas would have weapons with them. So as it relates to veterans on this here, veterans returning, they would all have that weapons familiarization training.
Mr. Blatton.
Mr. Chairman, just referring members to page 2 of the bill where you see the new language. The bill is very specific in referring to the type of firearm safety and usage that the veteran would need in order to obtain the exemption we're talking about here. If you look at beginning on line 2.16, it says, had obtained training or significant experience in firearm safety and usage during that service or employment for the same general type or class of rifle, shotgun, or handgun as they would be expected to use in the trade, employment, occupation, or profession. So it's pretty narrowly tailored.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bonner, the previous line says that provided that the person who was engaged in active military service or was engaged in the employment essential to prosecution of a war. So actually, number one, you only have to, under this language, you only have to have been in active military service, so you can be Senator Erickson Ropes, who never shot a weapon. Or you can be, you don't even have to be in the military. If as long as you were, abroad in the prosecuting a war or to the national defense. So there's kind of two kind of big loopholes there. Now, I agree with what you're saying. If you're military, prosecuting a war, and you have obtained significant experience in firearm safety and usage during that service, as it says, then I agree with the bill. but you kind of have some exceptions here, that you don't have to necessarily have been in the military as long as you were at war or essential to the prosecution of a war or the national defense. So you can be a civilian contractor in Iraq because you're essential to the prosecution of that war or to the national defense, never have been in the military, and be eligible. And maybe that's a value judgment for this committee, that's okay. But I just want to be clear that this isn't just for active military who have fought wars abroad and who have firearm safety. So,
Senator Chaudhry, I'm going to ask Mr. Botten to.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, there are a couple of points there. And on page one, you see the existing language that's already in law. That's been in law for quite some time. And the additional language here is intended to clarify how this existing language operates. And if you look there on beginning on line 1.16, you'll see that same phrase repeated there, who has been engaged or shall hereafter be engaged in employment outside of the U.S. essential to the prosecution of a war. So I guess that's a judgment a previous legislature made that this exemption was intended to apply to that category of individual. Then with regard to the other point that you raised on page 2, the way the new language is phrased, and I'll point out that I didn't draft this, but the way I'm reading it, you have the final clause that appears beginning on page 2, line 16, had obtained training or significant experience. I think that is intended to apply to either the category, either individual in the category of either active military service or the individuals engaged in employment outside of the U.S., so on and so forth. It could be we could amend it to make it clear that that's intended to apply to both categories.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Botten, maybe I don't understand then what's not clear about the current law.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, I think it really, if you look on line 2.12, you'll see the phrase license or certificate of registration. And I'm not certain of the specific history here, but it's clear enough that that was not interpreted broadly enough somewhere along the line to apply to the occupational license that would require firearms training.
Specific issues, sir. The smaller police departments.
Senator Chaudhry, there was during deployment some people, I believe, who were working as peace officers who were in smaller departments. Upon returning, realized that their license had expired and were forced to go through recertification. Okay. I believe that was the impetus for that language.
Well, maybe I'll just trust that this doesn't open up any new.
Any further discussion? Part of it is, Senator Scogin, if you have to go through that training, it costs you a few dollars, and these people come back with hardly any money. Hopefully, we don't want to make them pay $400 or $500 to get a certificate. It doesn't make sense. Okay. Any further discussion? Senator Scogin? What would you like to do?
Well, let's send it on to the recommended for to pass and send it to the floor.
Senator Scogin moves that Senate File 699 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Scogin, you might as well stay there and we'll take your next bill up, and that's 1318.
Looking at Senate File number 1318, committee and Mr. Chair, and we'll start with I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to present at this time.
Thank you.
His amendment is the exemption for military personnel in regards to firearm safety certificate. And with me is from the department is Bob Meyer from the agency.
Yep. Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The language in the A1 amendment is the same language we worked on in the House, in the Environment Committee, and I think it went right to the floor from there with the Firearm Safety Instructors Association. The issue of exemptions for people from our firearm safety program is something we take very seriously because it is something that's recognized throughout the country through the International Hunter Education Association. We need to make sure that what we provide has reciprocity in other states. Currently, you're required to have a firearm safety certificate if you were born after December 31st, 1979, so 26 years of age or younger right now. So there's a group of individuals that are exempt from firearm safety, people who are required. What this language does, it will allow someone who has successfully completed basic training in the United States Armed Force to be exempt from the shooting exercise from the firearm safety program. Right now, either if you take the class or you can take it online if you're over 18, there's a link off of our website to the International Hunter Education Association online program. It takes you about 5 or 6 hours to go through the program. You take tests after each section, much like the classwork. And perhaps the program shouldn't be called firearm safety. It's really a hunter education. You're talking about identification of species, conservation, crossing fences, tree stand safety, harnesses, hunter ethics, what to do when the principle of drawing first blood on an animal and things like that. So there's a lot more than actually handling the firearm. What this amendment will allow is for that a person either taking the course or doing the online program would be exempt from the requirement of shooting 15 rounds of ammunition at the range on that day. They would still have to meet an officer or certified firearm instructor, which I am one, and take the test, and then they talk about tree stand safety, some harness, on hands-on activities. So it's a little embarrassing for me as an instructor when somebody calls me up and says, I need to take the test. I go up there and meet this guy, and he just came back from active duty, or he has extensive shooting experience, for me to hand him my .22 and say, okay, now you have to take 15 rounds, take 15 shots at a target. I would rather spend the time talking with them about under-education, about what to do in the woods when you run across somebody in certain circumstances, things of that nature, rather than have to have that. It's something we worked out with the authors and with interested parties. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin, maybe we should move the A1 amendment to get the bill in order that you would like to have it.
But move the A1 amendment.
Senator Scogin moves the adoption of the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now your bill should be in order.
We'd stand for questions on Senate File 1318 as amended.
I did talk to Mr. Meyer, and everything is okay, and I think that's what our biggest concern was. Any other discussion? Senator Shadrick.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess the couple question I had was, Mr. Meyer, how often does that happen that someone comes in and take their 15 rounds and they have previous military experience?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, this past year I've certified about 25 people or so. I'd say three or four of them had military, I think it was four. Most of them had a lot of hunting experience. They were exempt from the firearm certificate because of their age, but they needed to have a certificate to go hunt in other states. So even the older people are taking these classes right now. But they are required to shoot and do fire the rounds. So this would be specifically for veterans, the way it's written.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, one thing that struck me about what you said was you took that time to talk to that individual about, what did you say, about various aspects of...
Mr. Chair, ethics. Senator, hunter ethics, tree stand safety, more people die, as you may or may not be aware, falling out of tree stands and by getting shot, any firearms accidents in any tree stand or any hunting season. It's 3 to 4 to 1 at least. They also are required to complete an exercise with our book, which we call the Hunter Ethical Dilemmas, where there's 3 or 4 questions they can choose. They have to do an essay on that, which they'll still be required to do, and the instructors go back and read those answers, talk about the dilemmas with them. One talks about you shoot a deer, you track it, and somebody else says it's theirs. Talks about running around in your camouflage into the restaurants and things like that. And different scenarios that you have to respond and answer an essay-type questions to. So there is a lot more than just firearm safety. We call it firearm safety, but it is a comprehensive hunter education program. And they would still be required to take that and do that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, does that essay and discussion normally happen at the time of the shooting requirement?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, they bring their homework to the instructor. We go through it usually, whether taking the written test, which they have to have 75% or better on. The instructor is reading their scenarios and making sure they answer the right way. I'll discuss them a little bit with them, certify their test. What I do is I have a couple of trees. We can show them the different types of stands that are out there. And really, the range part of it is the shortest time. It takes, 5 minutes, if that, to shoot 15 rounds. Just a couple minutes, put the target up, shoot the gun, and then take the target down, basically. So there's a lot more contact. And I believe that's why the Firearm Safety Instructors Association was comfortable with the language, that contact is still going to take place. It's just exempting them from discharging that firearm.
Any further discussion?
I won't, Mr. Chair, I won't belabor Chad the Ray. Point. Maybe we should just have a further discussion in the Environment Committee about it.
Senator Chaudhry, you want the bill to come to your committee?
Might be a good idea. We have time. So we've got time to hear it. And
well, Senator Chaudhry, you're the chair, and I'm going to honor your request.
Let's do that.
So if there's no further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I'd recommend Senate File Number 1318 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee.
Everybody hear the motion. Senator Scogin, maybe you could visit with Senator Chaudhry, and maybe you wouldn't have to go that route.
I believe
right
he said it well. We have
it.
Time.
We're going to send it there because he's asked for it. Yep. And that's,
we'll have that discussion.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thanks for your help.
Now we have Senate File 251. Senator Ricks and Robes.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I will remind the incumbent senators that they went through this last year, passed the bill last year, passed it on the Senate floor, and it failed in the House. So I am happy to bring back a resolution to you this year's. I think we'll get it through the House this time. This has to do with Lance Corporal Charles Lindbergh, not the pilot, but the World War II veteran. Mr. Lindbergh is the last surviving member of the original Iwo Jima flag-raising team. And I was very fortunate to meet him. In fact, I think if you talk to most vets or maybe active duty military as well, Mr. Lindbergh's name is one of the most revered veteran names in the state of Minnesota. When I was running for Senate a couple of years ago, some local veterans came to me with this issue, seeing if there was a way that I could help. There was a local veteran in Rochester who wanted to name the VA clinic in Rochester after Lance Corporal Lindbergh and was running into apathy and disinterest and stone walls. So some of my local vets told me about the project, and I said, well, let's see what we can do about it. To make a long story short, Senator Kaskaden wound up carrying the bill, And if you incumbent senators will remember last year, it was presented to the Senate, and there was a long, prolonged standing ovation, and I was really pleased to stand with Mr. Lindbergh in the Senate gallery and help him up out of his wheelchair to look down at the Senate chambers as he passed this resolution last year. It's a resolution calling on the President and the Congress to name the Rochester VA Clinic after Mr. Lindbergh. All the parties are in complete agreement. The VA Clinic is leasing the building it's in. The name would travel with the clinic if they change buildings. It's not attached to the building. And there is precedent for naming a VA clinic in a particular state after a local hometown hero. That same thing did happen in Wisconsin. And Mr. Lindbergh now is 78 years old and is practically wheelchair bound, and I would love to get this resolution passed in the Senate and the House this year and forward it to Congressman Tim Walz, who's the highest ranking enlisted man, I think, ever serving in the U.S. Veterans Committee, and he said he will pick this up and make sure it happens at the federal level. So I put this resolution before you this morning and stand for any questions.
Well, Senator Ropes, I attended that in room 318. I remember this clear as a bell. And I got two pictures in my office with this gentleman. So I'm supposed to follow what goes on here, but it was not unbeknown to me that it didn't pass in the House. I must have missed something.
Well, it made the front page, Mr. Chair, of many newspapers across the state. And it was just, it was too bad that it didn't pass on the House side. But Mr. Lindbergh has spent his life talking about the flag raising. And as you may know, there was the original flag raising that happened under fire with a smaller group of men. And they put up a smaller flag. And then about 2 hours later, they took down the original flag in order to preserve the integrity of that flag for history purposes, and put up a larger flag that was a staged event. And actually, that's the one that had the camera, the photo, spread around the world. And there's a movie out right now called Flags of Our Fathers that talks about the Iwo Jima battle. So if there's any more questions about this, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to honor Mr. Lindbergh and, in fact, all World War II veterans.
Any discussion? Going back to my further statement, I thought we took care of this last year. That bothers me that we didn't do it. I thought we did. So, Senator, I will guarantee you this time it will pass out of here. We'll put it on the consent calendar. We'll speed it up as fast as we can. And you have to work with the House. And I will especially talk to the House chairman over there to see that this doesn't happen again. So, Sharon Erickson Ropes moves that Senate File 251 be recommended to pass, and I'm going to put it on the consent calendar.
Thank you, sir.
Any other discussion? Senator Chaudhry.
Just a question. Are resolutions going through the Rules Committee first, or doesn't it matter? I prefer it go on the consent calendar, but I'm just wondering if there's that procedural thing.
Mr. Chairman, I can't give an answer to that right now. Not too familiar with the resolutions. I'd have to look into the rules on that. But I think you're safe enough sending it to the consent calendar, and then the Rules Committee will request it.
If they won't have it on a consent calendar, they'll bring it back to rules. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, committee.
Senator Erickson Ropes, you have Senate File 683.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I have Mr. Cox from the Veterans Home Board here with us today, and Mr. McAfee with AFSCME, and they've worked out a little bit of a language finesse, and Mr. Bottern would be willing to offer that verbal amendment. We just got the language as we walked into committee. Mr. Bottern?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I'll give you the suggested language that you can offer. It's on On page 1, line 8, before no, insert except as provided in this section, and then comma. And then on page 1, line 10, delete is mandated or volunteers to work, and insert works. And then on page 1, line 11, delete shall and insert may.
Mr. Chair, I move this as an author's amendment, please.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, why would we take out the shall and put may in? Aren't we going to require that they get a free meal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, thank you very much for the question. That is why, actually, the bill was brought to me in the beginning. There had been, you've been hearing testimony about double shifts, and the staff believe that they should at least be able to get a free meal at the commissary if they have to work mandatory overtime. And so the bill came forward. In trying to negotiate between the two parties, what we've settled on is this language, because we did not want to mandate a negotiated benefit from the legislature that should really be in the province of the union and the employer. Both parties are satisfied with that. Actually, this gives Mr. Cox and the board an opportunity to give a commissary meal to the staff without being mandated to do that. And it also allows us to step back from getting in between a negotiated item. And everybody's happy with it.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, if you're happy with it, I will support your efforts. As I was looking at this language, I was thinking that, if they're going to work an additional 8 hours, they ought to get two meals. To be honest with you, I think we're headed the wrong way with the shell to May, but if you're happy with it, I'll support your efforts.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, actually, yes, thank you for that observation, and you're quite right that this bill does undo the requirement.
Senator Rove, maybe we should hear from one or your other two witnesses. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Chip Cox. I'm the interim executive director of the Minnesota Homes Board. The Minnesota Veterans Homes Board is responsible for the operation of 5 veteran homes throughout the state. The veterans home is home to over 800 veterans. The homes employ over 1,000 workers to care for those veterans. Unfortunately, occasionally there's a need to have staff stay and work overtime. When that occurs, we would like to offer them a complimentary meal in our dining room. Few staff plan ahead to know that they're going to be working an additional shift. Quite often that decision is made in the last hour or two of their current shift. So they may not bring additional money to buy dinner, and they might not, most likely not, bring food along for the dinner meal or the lunch meal or whatever shift that they are working over. So this gives us an opportunity, a small thank you for working those additional hours, whether it be 4 hours or 8 hours or whatever number that would be. So we would like to offer that to our employees.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, I'm Mark McAfee, representing AFSCME. The amendment that you have before you reflects what's come out of the House committees. And the first thing I want to be clear is when people first look at this bill, I think they believe the union came and wanted to negotiate through the legislature. That's not the case. It actually wasn't our bill, but we're glad to support it. Current law prohibits providing any such meal. And what this, the key phrase is to change shall to may, and so it's permissive. It allows management, represented here by Mr. Cox, to offer this. It also would permit, in a case we have an employee that again, as he said, is asked to work overtime, didn't plan on it especially. But it also allows us, should it become a topic of a collective bargaining discussion and potential agreement, it allows us to potentially do that, you know, in the future. So this has worked out in the House, and I believe it to be identical to what they've done so far there. So thank you.
Well, members, maybe we should put this or amendment on the bill to get it the way you want it. And I'm going to ask Senate Counsel to go through that so we're on the right track.
Mr. Chairman, I can read the amendment again very quickly if you would like. On page 1, line 8, before no, insert except as provided in this section, comma. On page 1, line 10, delete is mandated or volunteers to work and insert works. And on page 1, line 11, delete shall and insert may.
Everybody understand the amendment? Senator Chaudhry?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Who is against the shall language?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I'll try to answer that. I think when we had the first, in the House side, when we had the first hearing on this bill, I think we had some legislators, again, presumed that by saying shall, that somehow the legislative process was being used to negotiate a benefit for employees, that this must be provided. And from our standpoint, you know, the may, change it to may is just fine. Management has indicated they, from time to time, may provide this, and it would allow us to, again, if it came up in a future, you know, bargaining discussion to negotiate this, it would allow that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. McAfee, they have come to us and said that they would like this to be able to provide their employees. So how can it be a bargaining issue?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, current law says that privileges shall no commissary privileges shall be provided. So current law, at least the way we read it, would prohibit that being part of a contract. Current law just is that first, obviously the first underscored, not underscored line. Okay.
Let's go
ahead. I'll wait till after the amendments voted on.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Bodern can answer this for me. I don't understand the need for the S in works on that, on line 1.10. It would read then Minnesota Veterans Homes, who is mandated or volunteers to works a second shift?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Gimsey, the oral amendment included deleting is mandated or volunteers to work, and you're just substituting works for that. So the sentence would read an employee of the veterans' homes who works a second shift.
Thank you, Mr. Bonner. I didn't catch that.
Any further discussion? Not all in favor? We're on the motion, Your Honor. Where did we?
I haven't adopted it.
Yeah, we need to adopt the motion first. Chairman Robes, oral motion. Everybody understand it? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Now the bill is in order. Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Erickson-Rope, now that we have made this permissive, I would propose that we strike the 1 on line 11. And on line 12, I would propose after meal insert an S. And I don't know what you would think of that, but being it's permissive, I can see that it would do no damage.
Mm-hmm. We have no problem with that.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd move that amendment, please.
On line 1.
Line 11.
1-1.
Strike the 1.
Strike the 1?
Yep. Mm-hmm. On line 1.12, add an S so it reads meals.
Okay. Everybody understand it?
The other thing, Mr. Chair, what I would propose now that I'm reading this is where it says on the day of, what if we say during that extra shift? I think it would be more clear if we would make that change also.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bowden.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, the only, well, let's see, twist I could think of for that might be that the meal might be provided after the shift ends. That could be
free meals.
Okay, I'm fine with on the day of.
So you're going to withdraw your...
So what he's
saying. Did you make amendment?
I will not make the second part of the amendment, but I still would like to strike the one and make meal.
As long as mazed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody understand it? On the Scoy amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now should be back to the bill. Any further discussion? Not. Senator Erickson Robes, what would you like to do as a bill?
I would like to, I don't have the number.
683.
Thank you. I'd like to recommend that 683 pass, and does it head to the floor from here?
Can.
Yeah.
Okay, go to the floor.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cox.
One last, Senator Hamm.
Finally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I have Senate File 120, Veterans Memorial Grant Provision, but before we talk about that, I'd like to offer a delete all amendment as an author's amendment to put this in the form that we wish it to be. And that would be, I think it's A07-0079 being distributed right now.
Senator Hand moves the adoption of the 0079 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Now your bill is in order, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill that actually came to my attention through a veteran and a constituent who happens to be with us here today, John Mallow, and I'll ask him maybe to say a few words. But he's a veteran and a member of an organization that he helped initiate in my hometown, Eden Prairie, that is building a memorial to veterans who have served in various conflicts around the world. In the course of doing that, they have raised money privately, and they've gotten some help from the city. And in talking this over with him and other members of his organization, we felt it might be helpful for the state to provide help to veterans organizations across the state who are doing similar things. So I then talked to Deputy Commissioner Puglisi, who happened to come out at one of our events in Eden Prairie, and asked, are there other communities that are working at doing these things? And he said that there were. So what we tried to do was put together some language in a bill that be a bonding provision, actually, that allows for a matching grant to be presented on the condition that $50,000 is raised locally, that the state would then match up to $50,000 to that organization through a local government agency to be used for the purposes of constructing the memorial. And we've asked for an appropriation of $1 million, which is enough to, I think, to see what the level of the need might be. And if the grant money is not used, there's provision for it to be returned to the general fund. And so before we take questions, I would like to ask just Deputy Commissioner Puglisi if he might make a couple of comments, and then I'd like my friend Mr. Mallow to maybe make a few comments about the project in Eden Prairie.
Mr. Chair, members, Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. As Senator Hand mentioned, you know, I did come out to a program in Eden Prairie, and they're building a beautiful memorial. And a lot of communities across the state are attempting to do the same to honor their veterans and the service and the sacrifices. Unfortunately, they don't have the resources available to them to get the project off the ground, to get it moving in the right direction. And in talking with Senator Hand, it seems like this might be a way in which to help them get the program and the process moving. You know, putting some money out there to match whatever they can raise, up to $50,000, in talking with a lot of the county veteran service officers, seems to be a big help in pushing it in the right direction. We do get contacted quite frequently from county veteran service officers, commissioners in different counties that would like to do something like that, and they're seeking funds from our department. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have any way in which to help them. And it would be a nice gesture to help them move this process along. There is a lot of interest out there in the veterans service community, in the veterans organizations, the United Veterans Legislative Council, and I believe a letter was passed around. They have fully endorsed this. The Commander's Task Force, the members of that have talked about it, and they think it would be a wonderful way in which to help honor our veterans throughout the state and help educate communities on the service and sacrifice. So while it's not a part of the governor's military and veteran support package, it certainly is something that the veteran community embraces.
And Mr. Chairman, and I just want to call attention to the members. There is a letter from the United Veterans Legislative Council, Jerry Kaiser, who's been a frequent attender at our committee hearings. We did meet with him and his organization and presented this bill to that organization, and they have written us a letter of endorsement. And as Mr. Puglisi has mentioned, we think that the veterans organizations across the state see this as a help. We are very sensitive about not doing something that would be seen as a detraction from other efforts that we're all interested in doing to provide help to veterans. We don't want this to be seen as a competition for much-needed funds. So we're trying to be modest in our request for help, but to do it in a way that is responsible and would provide some help to people who are trying to do some good things in their communities. And if I could have a few minutes and ask Mr. Mallow to talk a little bit about what he's been doing in Eden Prairie, I think it might be of interest to the committee, and certainly a testament to his activity in helping our veterans groups do some good things in Eden Prairie.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Mallow, and I'm chairman of the Eden Prairie Veterans Memorial. We have raised $80,000 so far in our project. The project is $300,000, not including the land. One of the problems that we have, Eden Prairie is a city of 65,000 to 70,000 people, and our town does not have a VFW nor an American Legion. And so raising funds are a little more difficult because we do not have neither in our hometown. And so this money would greatly help. Thank you.
And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, members, or you may have.
Senator Hahn, I'm trying to figure out a lot of communities. In fact, three of them in my district, I helped him raise $50,000 myself. Not my personal money, but I work people to get it. I know there's three more are raising the same money. And I'm all for what you're doing here, but do we have a time that you can't go back? Follow what I'm trying to say?
Mr. Chairman, are you asking if we did not put in here a provision for programs that might currently be in process? I think if they are in process and haven't been completed, I would think they'd be eligible to apply for the grant. This would be administered by the commissioner. In talking to the department, they are willing to establish a process to award those grants, but I don't see any reason why a memorial that hasn't been completed, that is in process and has raised $50,000, that they would then be eligible to apply for the grant, is my understanding.
Well, Senator Hahn, what we're trying to do, community that I told you help, they can raise the money themselves, but some communities can't raise, are not able to raise the money themselves. So I think what we're trying to do is a good thing here. But if we send this, if it goes from here, then we'll let it has to go to bonding.
Yeah, finance.
And go to finance, and then you can fine-tune it from here to there. But I think it's a good idea, and it costs a lot. Spend $300,000 to $400,000 easily on it, because the ones I've visited are nice, big granite. I mean, they're really something. They're not just something to throw it up. And so a wonderful idea, and we'll have to send it to finance. Then we'll figure out. Senator Langstaff is not smiling over here, but we'll see what he's going to do.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that Senator Langstaff is in the committee.
So, Senator Hahn, is there any more questions? your hand. What's your wishes?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass this bill to finance.
Senator Hand moves that Senate File 120 be recommended to pass and be referred to finance. Is that right?
As
right
amended.
Motion?
As amended.
Yep.
As amended.
As amended.
As amended.
Yes, sir, we amended it. Okay. We all set? Everybody understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. I believe, members, that takes care of this part. So thanks, Mo, for sticking around, and we're adjourned.